Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, interesting people pop in to rent something. We go through the films that they've loved across their life, and we are just here to help you figure out what you could be watching on streaming platforms and out in cinemas. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? Good morning.
Morning, Russell.
Hey.
Come on, let's get some energy.
Yeah!
What's up?
It's the morning. Dingo and the baby.
Welcome to the video store. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for wandering into our video store. I've got Gaddy with me, and I've got Graham with me.
Yo.
And I've got me with me.
Those are our names, and me is Russell.
And today on the video store, Anton Taylor is going to pop in to rent something.
Cool.
You know him probably most from the Tully baby diary,
yes.
Wedding diary. So he's an actor, but he is also so many things. This is not unlucky. He is a speaker, a writer, a yoga teacher, amongst many things, but a nice dude, fun guy, real fun dude.
Cool.
And so I think it's going to be a good chat. I think let's waste no time.
Agreed.
We've just started here. Have you guys got something that's going to keep you busy when Anton is going to pop in?
Doing my taxes.
You're going to do your taxes. It is time to start thinking about your taxes.
Right.
You've got until like November though, hey? Every year. No, but you got to get it done. Otherwise.
Yeah.
And G-Force?
I'm going to go figure out if we should arrange the Planet of the Apes movies alphabetically or chronologically.
Okay.
It's a conundrum.
About autobiographically.
I was about to say, there's a lead-in to a high-fidelity joke where you arrange the movies on the shelf autobiographically.
The order in which you saw them.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. All right, let's get into it. This is Anton Taylor popping in to rent something. How's it?
How's it? Good. Great to be here. Thank you for making it work.
Great to meet you. Great to get to know you. This is what I'm sure you've maybe had something similar where you need these chats to get to know some people that you wouldn't normally be able to meet. Often with the video store, it's been people close to me. But we have slowly, as we've gone, put together a wish list, and you were on it. So thank you for making the time.
Well, I feel very honored. I see I'm in the company of some really interesting people that have been on the show. So I think to think that I was on the wish list is very flattering.
Man. Yeah, I saw you. I also play in a band, and we were at Daisy's last year. And I saw you wandering around with the microphone doing stuff. And I was like, hey, it's the guy from Tully's Diary.
Yes.
And then I started consuming your stuff. And I just appreciated just the amount of stuff you put out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think what's very interesting nowadays is how people are making a living.
And what
they are doing and how it's obviously not just this one particular thing. You're doing so much. How do you describe yourself?
Jeez, it's such an interesting question when people are like, what do you do? And you're like, oh, you know.
Because you got a few answers. There's the like dinner party answer,
yes,
you know, where you
exactly.
just got like one line.
Yeah. It's nice. I think I just remember the greatest relief when I was in Tully's wedding diary, the first one.
Yeah.
And I remember like the first day of filming and you know, it was such a big opportunity for me. And before I was so nervous, like, is it, you know, you start thinking, what happens if I like slip and break my leg the day before filming? It just seemed almost just too good to be real. And I just remember the relief where I was like, I can just tell people now I'm an actor. Like if somebody asks what I do, I don't have to be like, well, if you look at this, like I do these YouTube skits and I was in this advert. I can just say like one word answer.
I'm an actor.
And you can go into Showmax and you'll see it.
I was about to say, because you needed that gig.
Yeah.
Because then the next follow-up question is, what have you been in?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Because then to be able to say, oh, and you'll be able to like, you can see it. Because they'll like, you know, and then for it to often to extend to people then going, you know, in the years afterwards saying, oh, I saw you, so they preempt it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I wonder, I'm sure anyone who does a job which is not a one-word answer maybe gets a bit of stress at, you know, and particularly freelance work where you have to deal with times where there's empty space and people are like, so, like, what do you, like, what do you do on a Monday? Like, do you, and you're like, well, you know, sort of an existential dread and, and
I've had friends from high school sort of go, like, what do you do? What's your what do you do in the day?
Yeah.
And I was like, to be honest, I sit at a computer and answer emails.
Yeah, exactly. And
as the bioscope, that's like the least romantic part of it. But it's like, I just answer emails. That's what I do.
Yeah, and you try to be creative and you know, I then I'm no longer working at Supersport, but I worked as a rugby commentator for half a decade. Yeah, and that was also, I mean, it was a great gig, but it was also fantastic because it was another just easy answer, you know, commentator. And then they So these days, I mean, it's been an interesting journey because I always wanted to be an actor. And I did a BA at UCT. I did a... the BA started off doing drama at Heading Campus around the corner. And that was more theatre based. And I, you know, the guys who do it, like they really love, like I really respect it. Like they want, you know, well, they really are theatre based. And I was like, no, I wanted to do more on screen stuff. So I just thought I'm going to do a more traditional degree and I'll make my own skits. And I was very lucky that, you know, 10 years before I started doing online stuff, there wasn't that platform. So, like, if you wanted to be an actor, you had to go through traditional routes and go to an interview and an audition and somebody has to like you. Whereas I think what we've seen in the past 15 years, 10 years is, like, anybody can make content. And if it's, you know, it gets enough traction, there's a way for them to get into mainstream, you know, traditional TV if that's what they want.
But, I mean, even some of the people we know and love created their own TV show.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same thing. Obviously that's a little bit even tougher to do, but Always Sunny in Philadelphia, like you and I could have made that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's cheap cameras and it's, you know.
And exactly. When I think, you know, at the time I started doing skits and I did a series called Josie Shore, which was a very like, it was about Joburg Boots in Cape Town. And it was popular with like young Matric boys to the day, to the extent that, you know, because people will come up to me for different things I've done and, you know, something.
Josie Shore. Yeah. Did it take itself seriously? Or was it a skit?
No, it was like a, no. It was about a bunch of boots that come to Cape Town and about that culture clash. And they're like sort of, you know, look, I'm very proud of it. And I don't think it's like, you know, like many things, it was probably over a decade ago, maybe some of the, like, the way they talk about chicks and you know,
maybe some
probably
of it
a little bit,
well,
you know, a little bit antiquated. But I think everyone can sort of see you're playing a role. And at the time, that was, like, viral. And, know, remember we were on the, like, 5FM show and we had, like, we had a coffee table book, like, published by Pan Macmillan. Called The Wisdom of Josie Shore, you know, things would be like, it's not about the car, it's about the size of the arm hanging out the window. And that's just the wisdom of the, like, so it was the top 100 one-liners.
But was it scripted?
No, in fact, how cool. There was a guy from UCT, Dean Shamley, and he was like, look, you know, because I'd approached the Film Society, like, I want to make some, you know, skits. And I'd done some videos as well, I think, on my own YouTube. And at the time, I was always like asking some guy, can you do me a favor and it'll be good exposure for you and these poor oaks, you know.
Classic.
Anyone who's done video editing knows the insane amount of sound, like time it takes to do it. But he actually thought, well, why don't you do this play on like these Joburg boots coming to Cape Town and said Josie Shore. So I literally just got my mates from like school and varsity, not actors in any way. We would just, the plan was like, we just got, we maybe had a thin narrative of like, okay, well, there's one day we go to the beach or something. And we just got absolutely hammered. Like when we watching that back, I mean, there's takes from it where I am not there, you know?
Really,
and so the editor would stitch it into a sort of somewhat coherent storyline. But these just really, I think, hit the zeitgeist of the moment. So
that inspired you to kind of keep doing that kind of stuff.
And it led to then more like legitimate stuff. And I, you know, then was in a short film by a guy called Roger Young called... called Keys, Money, Phone. And I was the lead role and I was it was like a unpleasant, privileged oak who goes out on a night in Claremont and loses his keys, money, phone. And basically him trying to work his way out home and like he's a bit more serious. And at the end it's sort of like everyone's like, what a legend. And it kind of shows that he's like got real privileged prick and there's no repercussions. And then that film won the Dublin Film Fest, I think it was. Yep. And it came out like a year or so before the Rhodes Must Fall protest, but then almost like had a resurgence afterwards because the people were talking so much about white privilege and, you know, I don't know if originally that it was made with that particular like theme. I'm not sure, you know.
That's what makes a film good is if it's rich with a lot of different stuff.
Exactly. And so then Ari Kruger, who is, and Julia Anastopoulos, who are the team behind Tully's Diary and Suzelle. So Julia is Tully and Ari is her husband. And they contacted me. Oh, well, this is what had happened. Showmax had contacted me and said, we love Josie Shaw. Would you be able to make it into a TV show? And at the time, I was like, I don't know, mid-20s.
Yeah.
My partner who'd filmed it, we just didn't have the... it didn't come together, you know. Julia and Ari said, we're thinking of doing this, like, and I honestly think Tully's was initially could have been like an online series, you know, like sponsored by Checkers or something.
Yeah.
And we did a 7-minute pilot and I was like, look, I was once contacted by somebody at Showmax and I had an email and, you know, I'm not saying that I'm necessarily the you know, maybe it would have ended up there anyway.
But you were a nice help to get it on Showmax.
Yeah, I like to think so. And, it turned out to become, you know, Showmax's first original series.
That's right. It was their first original one. And it was really great because it was very unfiltered.
Yeah.
And a lot of South African stuff sometimes has to be filtered or ends up being filtered. And so we don't get this very authentic version of ourselves, even though we're playing sort of silly characters. Tully's was particularly good because it was well written.
Yeah.
Well acted, but it was also just that much more, you know, 16, 18, whatever kind of age limit it was. And so, which is kind of a little bit more like what real life is.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great.
I think it was.
And I thought you were great as well.
Thank you. Thanks.
It was lovely. It was one of those like quite landmark shows for South Africa.
I think it was. You know, I think I felt at the time really proud about just the way it came out and sort of... as you say, I think South African TV and stuff is quite conservative. I think just that style of mockumentary, particularly at the time, was quite, you know, unique to South African styles. I'm sure, you know, there had been other people who did it. So being in it was just so special. And then just to sort of track back to the original question, after that, I felt a bit too proud to go back to doing online videos because I was like,
I'm a TV star now.
I work on the silver screen. I'm not one of your TikTokers. You know, I actually just thought, you know, and anyone who works as an actor will know, like, particularly in South Africa, if you're an English-speaking actor, there isn't tons of work, you know. I think I believe in the Afrikaans market and, like, Xhosa, Zulu... you know, the other South African local
languages.
What
about white guys that can speak?
Tulsa? Well,
I see that you're very good at that.
I honestly, it is.
I don't think there's any work for you there, but at least it gives you.
I'm hoping that, like, see, the thing is, my Xhosa is not like I'm always going to speak with an accent,
sure,
you know.
Sure.
But I'm like, come on, surely you need like a white villain in like, you know.
You can speak the language.
And I'm really hoping it's on my, you know, let's say 2024, 2025 wish list. I would love to be in a local.
It's cool that you could do that. Really, I really admire the fact that you can.
Thank you.
Speak
Thanks,
the language,
dude. Yeah.
So a part of me always sort of wished to do it.
Yeah.
But, and yeah, I'd somehow never found the time.
It's hard. It's hard work. Look, I mean, I'm not, and I just mean that as a way of like, I think people often feel guilt like about not being able to speak like some of the local languages. And I would even say, like, I think you can get the clicks of South African names, like, if you practice it. But for like someone who's grown up speaking English or even Afrikaans, even getting the, is takes a bit of time for the mechanics. And I have worked very hard at it. So some people are like, like I once met a guy who's like, oh, I just like picked up Xhosa. Like, I mean, great for him if he did that. The guys that I've met who speak it generally are white dudes who grew up, you know, particularly in the Eastern Cape.
There's a means to an end on the farm.
Yeah, exactly.
It's some group, yeah.
And then there's a few guys who learnt it as adults, but you can just tell the fluency levels. But so anyway, last year I decided let me actually start doing online videos again, and like let's take it properly, you know. And I think it was a really beautiful thing, because the only thing that was stopping me doing online videos before was a sense of pride. And at that time, also, I was working at Supersport, and I was just aware that, you know, when you want to do comedy, when you want to make content, you have to take risks.
And I say, you've got to be quite vulnerable, because you're playing the fool as well.
Yeah.
But then you also are finding lines.
Yeah.
And you might cross them.
Exactly. And sometimes you're going to, you know, be offensive. Sometimes, you know, which happens more often, is sometimes you're just not funny, you know? Like sometimes, you know, no one has... No one has a recipe for I'm going to make a like every bit of content I make is always going to be hilarious and clever. And
yeah, and you hear these great stories of the SNL people saying that, you know, they get this kind of standing ovation in the writer's room and everyone thinks the skit's going to do so well.
Yeah.
And then on the night it bombs, or dress rehearsal it bombs, and so it doesn't even see the show.
Yes.
So yeah, it's funny. And sometimes it's just, the other way around, you could just be there and find comedy and other things.
So yeah, man, exactly. And I think when you and you sometimes have to be silly, you know, and sometimes I have thoughts like I'm a 30, you know, like I'm in my 30s and I'm like dressed up as a chick wearing a wig, and you know, and I've managed to also like really give myself like, you know, like have a jaw about it, instead of going like, there was a stage, I think, before I got to Tully's where I was like, my friends are lawyers and doctors.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, dancing around on a YouTube video, hoping that I, you know, get some hits. And I managed to get it, you know, to get past that. But what was so interesting, man, was like, it took a while to find my voice again, because I think having worked like, for big companies, you just become a bit more almost not brand friendly, but you start inhibiting. It's quite hard to not inhibit parts of yourself. And I think that many like people who've come up through the social media route or who are creative, when they start getting bigger success, and I didn't necessarily have like big corporate sponsors or anything like that, but you just become a bit aware like, ooh, the risks I take could have repercussions, you know, and especially if I'm aligned with Supersport and you know, like,
I've got to keep them in mind.
I've got to keep them in mind. And then I left Supersport, and it took me like a couple months to like find my voice again. Like, and I was so frustrated, because I was like putting out like videos that would get like, and to anyone who wants to go down this road, like I would just really advise you to just be persistent, you know, because it takes so much grinding often. And I was, I'd make videos and they get like 2,000 views and like, you know, one comment. And I was like, come on, man. When I did like Josie Shaw, I was getting hundreds of thousands of views. It was like everyone was talking. And over the years, I'd done some videos on my YouTube and different skits that had also done really well. And then I was like, have I become old? Have I, you know, and I'm sure many musicians also have that thing where they're like, you know, they're someone who I often think of like Alanis Morissette, who like changed the world with her first album, Jagged Little Pill, and then, or Tracy Chapman, and they were both big musical influences. And then like afterwards trying to like.
No, it's hard. Yeah, yeah. And it, yeah, with the band. I mean, Short Straw, we came out
of... Oh, you're Short Straw. Yeah. Oh, dude.
I'm the bassist.
Great music, man. that's awesome.
We came out of lockdown going, wait, are we a legacy band now?
Yes, yeah.
Where like the comments were like, oh, blast from the past, and it's so great to see you again. And it's like, oh, yeah. Because then you also count back and you're like, geez, I've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, and of course, man, I didn't click that you...
No, Jesus, you don't need to, don't worry.
Then I'm sure you'd relate, man. Like, it's like, you have Short Straw, like when I think of some of their music, I'm like taken back to 5FM.
Yeah,
listening and being like, oh, man, like, and to say like, well, no, we still can... And maybe you've had thoughts like, I had thoughts like, well, has the world changed? Have I missed the boat? Like, am I still producing a humor that's,
relevant
dated? Or, I really just pushed through it. And I'm not sure if it's similar with music, but like when you, and the great thing about social media is you get to see in lifetime, do people find this funny? Do they not? So I think so much of it is like, yes, it's about being entertaining and funny, but a lot of it's about like working, like responding, being like, oh, okay, and it's not like a scientific method, but like working out, people find this funny more than that. So okay. I started realizing last year, I was doing videos where I would like, I found an amazing colleague, Dave Rados, who like films all my stuff, edits my stuff, like the best dude to work with. And I was like, come, let's just make some content. We filmed like 10 videos on a day. And initially it was like videos about me just talking to camera, talking about subjects which I thought were funny. And they were like, they did okay, better. Like I'd started off doing book reviews and, they would get a few thousand views. And then these maybe got a little bit more and some of them got like 10,000 views. And I was like, oh, okay. And then one day I did like a skit. And then it like really well. And so again, it's like, it was through this process where you're like, oh, okay, people like skits. And then you maybe go, oh, okay, people like South African-isms.
The one thing to perhaps just say on this point is that what I think at the end of the day is that people will like you.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, you'll get the occasional thing that'll obviously break out bigger than you. But my realization post-COVID with the band was, at the end of the day, you've just got to look after your people. They have a relationship with you. There are now so many more other things that are taking up their attention and their time.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you've got to be true to yourself and your people, and you've got to look after them.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to give them something.
Exactly.
That they know, you know, and they look to you for a certain kind of thing.
I don't know if you, Russell, if you agree. I think there has to be an element of trust, because I think if you start just like trust the process, trust the course, trust yourself. Because I think if you try always react to, you know, I mean, that's an interesting thing where you go, oh my gosh, lately everybody seems to be doing TikToks with this or songs with this.
The trends of
and
it
then
all.
You just, you lose sight of like who you are. You
we
know?
We had that one album, which in our heads was the album that we thought people wanted to hear.
Mm.
And we're happy with it and we're proud of it. And there's a couple of songs that we really love. But the best ones were the ones that were like, oh, we think this is cool.
Yeah.
Not what do people expect from us?
Yeah, exactly.
Which was an interesting thing. You've just come back from a meditation.
Yeah,
or
man.
Or a week.
What was it? No, it was It was positive. It was proper. So it's called Vipassana meditation. And I would say whenever you hear of somebody in South Africa going on like a 10-day thing, it's probably through this Vipassana center. It's in Worcester.
What did you do?
Dude, so are you familiar with meditation?
Kind of.
So basically, I've been practicing mindfulness, which is the kind of westernized version of meditation. And there's many different kinds of meditation. Sure. I think that's a challenge because some people are doing visualization meditation and some people are... But basically, I would say most meditation or mindfulness talks about like focusing on something. So, you know, a lot of the meditation I've done is like you focus on the feeling of your breath.
That's what I kind of understand.
And it's great
it's about breath work.
I have like ADD. So what happens is you spend 2 minutes trying to focus on your breath and then your mind is
thinking about
a to-do list. And, you know, initially for me, it was really effective just because I used to ruminate. I used to like you know, the classic, like you have an imaginary argument with someone. And next thing,
do
it's
that
been
all the
like
time.
2 hours and you're like, what the fuck? Like, you know.
Yeah, and you sort of sometimes have to wake yourself up sometimes at night to go, I can't do anything about this now.
Yeah, and for me, it didn't make me happy, you know. And even sometimes I'd have daydreams, like pleasant ones about positive, but they can easily veer into, you know, maybe like you have a girlfriend and what if she cheats on me one day, or, you know, and you go down these, you know, whatever the...
Yeah.
And so this is like... It's funny because I went to the dude who'd like taught me mindfulness. I did a 6-week course. This is like 7 years ago. And I was like, if I want to level up, you know, he was like, look, there's this place in Worcester, but it's like hardcore. It's like, you know, 12 hours a day meditating. And
that's wild. Sitting.
Dude, yeah. So what it was the really impressive, really well run, like the people who do it. So it's in Worcester. You get there. I got there on Wednesday, almost 2 weeks ago, and you like didn't really know what's happening. You like check in. You get given a room, and they're like, "Cool, you can talk now, like to people," but you sort of don't really know what's happening. And then at like 7:30, they ring a gong, and it's like, "Cool, you're not talking." So for every day, today's my first, a gong wakes you up at 4 a.m., dog. Like,
Jesus.
4 a.m. And they walk around with the dong, 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 and you can meditate and there's a hall or in the room. So you're meditating from 4:30 in the morning with like brunch, like you have breakfast, lunch, and then tea. So that is also... Yeah.
Do you talk to each other at breakfast?
No talking. So Jesus. So for 10 days, you hand in your phone. You're not allowed music. You're not allowed books.
I'm helping you a little bit here because this is your first day back, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like...
Is there things you just need to
talk about? no, but... And it because I wondered when we said we'd do the podcast, I was like, look, I'm coming back from this... Yeah. This thing, and
this
I was
could
like,
go either way.
Well,
I could either be a bit messed up, or
I could be messed, or
I could have lots to talk about.
Will I want to talk? Because you haven't said uttered a word for 10 days, and they say like, you know, don't make eye contact with people when you walk past them. Okay, so you like,
oh, this is during
the course, just to like really, and then like. So for me, I think on the second night, I had a bit of like homesickness, classic, you know, you're just in a new place. But on the fifth day, I was like, dude, this is so... So the first 3 days, you just focus on your breath, okay? Like...
Yeah. Are they helping you? Because right now, I'm just thinking this is one of the greatest sort of... Not money-making, I'm being a bit cynical. But like, you don't have to provide much as a place.
Well, firstly, it's for free. You only pay afterwards. You give a donation, and they're like, "Look, this is how much." I mean, for 10 days, they say, "Yeah, it costs about 3,000 rand to feed you because you're getting 3 square meals a day."
Okay,
like,
so can you please pay towards that?
Well, they put no pressure on it. They're like, "If you want to, this would cover it. If you don't have the means." You know, for me, I felt like, look, I definitely got the value, and I would like to give a bit more personally. Yeah. And there's a teacher there.
I just have my like hospitality hat on, and I'm like, they're not doing much.
I don't mean to be
negative or cynical. I'm just saying like, you know, guys are coming and they're not doing much for the whole
day. I felt pretty looked after because they're also facilitating sittings, and there's, you know, in the evenings you watch like a video of this old like Indian dude or Burmese guy, and he's like explaining the meditation, and you haven't spoken to anyone. So you're like, he makes like a little joke and you're like on the floor laughing because you've been so deprived of like human contact.
Interesting, yeah.
But then this is weird. I mean, it's what I like about it is it stresses work. Like, you got to work on this shit. And I think in today's world, there's so many like biohacks and quick, like, you know, which I prescribe to, you know, like I try to get morning sunlight, you know, like in the morning, like Andrew Huberman says and stuff. But my belief is that generally, like, unfortunately, life's not as easy as you take a magnesium supplement and you like feel good. You know, you got to work for it. So this is like, you gotta work. So you spend 3 days just focusing on your breath for like, you know, 12 hours a day. Okay. And then what happens afterwards is you start doing these body scans. I don't know if you've ever done it where you like, it's like, okay, start off with all your attention in your head, at the top of your head, and then move down your forehead and like, notice, okay, how does it feel at the tip of your nose, right? So you go through your whole body.
There's a little bit of an acting class in there.
Yeah, and what happens
is they tend to do that as an actor in some training.
Yes, yes, exactly. And then they encourage you not to move, right? So after you've been sitting for 20 minutes and you're like, okay, my knees now started to get sore. And no one's standing there with a whip. But then you're like, you can't even think of the knee. They're like, but if your attention's on your nose right now, you're ignoring. And so the whole principle of it is equanimity. So you basically learn to go, no matter what happens to me in life, like I treat it equally. So the theory is that we're always trying to often escape things we don't like, and we're trying to move towards things that we don't like, that we do like. So it's like, seeking pleasure and then having aversion towards discomfort. And I certainly relate where it's like, I want to be on my phone, or I want to eat nice things, and you don't want to do the, you know, have the hard conversation or do, you know, we like pleasant things. And this is the idea, is that it's teaching you to go, I don't like, I mean, the way I don't know if you know David Goggins. He's like a Navy SEAL who espouses a real... And I was thinking about him on this course because it gets hard. It gets fucking hard. And is it okay if I swear?
Yeah.
And I was like, come on, motherfucker. Like. And so you're sitting there, and after an hour, your knee's like, you think you're never going to walk again because you know, you haven't bent your knee. Your knee is bent, and you're like, oh my God, this is the worst pain ever. But you're like, we'll treat it with equanimity. The sensation of pain in your knee is no more important than... This is what you're trying to tell yourself. Then the like throb in your ears. So after day five, I was just like, dude, this is so much. Like, imagine being told, I mean, it's not quite like an Excel spreadsheet because I believe it's good for you. But like, imagine it's day five of looking at spreadsheets for 12 hours a day. Yeah. And then you're like, I'm only halfway through. So
wild.
I must say it's been interesting coming back. Because I just feel much, much calmer, like really in a good space, light. My mind feels clear. And I think I do feel like a lot more like in the traffic now, you know, like a taxi cut me off and like, you know. Yeah. And this is what the guys had said, that there's like a lightness that kind of persists. So for me, it was really positive. And then the last day that you're allowed to start talking, and some people struggle to come back into talking.
Yeah.
But for me, I was just like,
I'm quite used to this.
It's a super cool opportunity to be able to come chat to you, man. And it's probably I don't know if I'll sound lucid, but it's probably the most lucid I'm going to be because I'm feeling clear. Yeah.
Lovely, man. Okay, so we have a little journey here, which we love to take.
I'm excited for this.
Where we go through the four great loves, which are the films that you've loved across the course of your life. Where did we grow up?
Cape Town.
Okay. So we've got the Puppy Love film, which is probably the first film that came to you. Often fun, often innocent.
Like first in my life.
Yeah, nursery school, primary school. Often okay. It's sort of like your first film memory.
So, I think probably it would have, I'm sure like many people, it's like films that your parents think are funny I think if I think about the first, it's going to be something with like an animal.
Yeah, yeah.
and it was, I don't think it was Watership Down. That's my like.
Jesus, that's a sad movie.
Yeah, it was. There's a one with a dog. But you know what it was? You know what I'm actually gonna say, man. That movie where it's about baseball, a bunch of kids that play baseball. Not the Sandlot or the Scratch Patch or the Sand Patch. There's a baseball movie about a bunch of kids that play baseball, and I'm telling our listeners, like, I could.
Not the Sandlot, eh?
Is that the name of a film called The Sandlot?
The little kids that play baseball.
Yeah, that was.
Pretty sure that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. The Sandlot. Okay. That was my. Watership Down, I remember crying, but if I think about like a young, my first ever movie, like that was...
The Sandlot had the kid with the one piece of hair that stuck up.
Yes, that's exactly it.
I got a pickle.
Yes, that's it, hair. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, lovely.
that's a great memory, and as we talk about it, I remember the love that I had for that film, yeah. Yeah.
Over to high school, where were we at high school?
High school, it definitely would have been about a girl. So it definitely would have been a crush on I don't think it would have been necessarily 10 things I hate about you. Like my tastes in music in particular are quite, I suppose you could say, girly. So, you know, I would have liked, it wouldn't have been like a blow 'em up kind of, you know, like Rambo or something like that.
Well, that's nice.
And it's probably like something where the guy gets the girl.
Like a nice romantic comedy.
A romantic comedy. I'm going to say, just for lack of another one that jumps out of my head, like 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah, which is great.
And there was, oof. American Pie. American Pie is a great.
Sure, I think we're similar aged. When were you born?
I was born 87.
Okay.
And you?
85.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's very similar.
Yeah. No, I remember American Pie hitting us at the start of high school, and it was like raunchy and.
Jeez, it was raunchy. And there was that chick Nadia. I remember, you know, who was. The Russian student that he hooks up with, and of course the pie scene, which you can imagine for a young boy is the most hilarious concept ever that someone could do. Like I loved it. Yeah.
But where did you go to high school?
I went to Bishop's, and I laughed just because. Look, I had a really great experience, and I'm very proud of my school. There's this. Almost every time you tell someone you went to Bishop's, there's some kind of like response. So thank you for not responding.
Being from Joburg, it doesn't sort of hold as much to me.
Okay, great. And it's not, and like there's a saying, how do you know someone went to Bishop's? Because they tell you.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes a while back I used to be like, oh, I'm from Bishop's, but I'm not like a prick. Well, you know, like this apologetic thing.
Disclaimer.
I think in my earlier years, I was a real like, Bishop's boy, you know, like, I was at Bishop's, you know, and now I'm just like, yeah, you know, that's
can't
just,
change it. It is.
And it's like, you know, I'm not an evil person. It's a good school. I'm really grateful I got to go there. So I went to Bishop's in
Rondebosch.
I was a day boy. Yeah. But I still got a lot of that kind of, all boys, you know, like that kind of rah-rah kind of vibe. Okay. Yeah, I was a war cry leader, cheerleader, whatever it was.
Really?
A real kind of like boy chi, yeah.
No, but that's interesting that they put you in charge of that? You obviously showed that kind of zest for life and that sort of ability to control the dudes.
What was great about the school was that I think it was like just it was celebrated to be successful, and it wasn't just like if you were good at sport, and I was good at sport, but you know, I got into public speaking and I was head of drama as well, and like that was like what I think was really cool is they had amazing facilities for the arts and music and but it also wasn't like, oh, you do drama, you're a little drama nerd. It was like, you know, like seen as a cool thing, you know. And they really had a great program for public speaking and debating, which I got really into. And I was given the opportunity to like, I went to like the World Schools public speaking competition and actually won in my category.
That's cool. In Cyprus. See the person who's going to become the commentator.
Yeah.
So
I think that, you know, I think I grew up in, my parents were divorced and it was quite a chaotic household. And I think I was really looking for external validation and affirmation at that time in my life. And I think if I'd been at a school where it was more like cool to be naughty or, you know, like the cool kids are smoking around the back of the thing, I think I just wanted to be seen. And you know, I think that's what led me into this line of work. It was like, I think I've done a lot of work, you know, including this meditation, but, you know, years of therapy to like not feel that I need to be seen and, you know, validated by others. But that incredible desire was luckily able to be channeled into more positive things. Like you say, like the war cry leading and cheering the boys on and being in plays and, you know, I did the valedictory speech. And so it put me on a path which then changed the course of my life, you know, and then that's what I pursued for and have pursued for the rest of my life. So, you know, I'll always be so grateful for that, you know, the way that it footed me there. Yeah.
Lovely, man. Varsity, start of career.
Yes.
We've got our other film, which is the It's Getting Serious.
Yes.
Curious whether there's a film that comes to you about that time?
And I'll just be straight honest, like there was a film which I loved and which I tried to emulate the main character, and often people from my time at university refer to me as the Van Wilder of UCT. And I spent a long time at university. I was very involved. I had a much larger than life personality, and a lot of people at UCT over that era, you know, whether it's for good or bad, I think will remember my kind of.
Were you a bit of a dude on campus?
I had like a mullet and a handlebar moustache, and I ran for the student government. I used to write for I was head of the humor section, and I. I used to write these very, sometimes I hope funny, but also just like provocative, but looking back, like provocative for the sake of provocative. Yeah, like, I don't know how clever I was. I was just trying to be offensive.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember broke the record for the most amount of complaints against me. And then I ran for the student government, and in that time, everyone was running with, like, you could run with political parties. I think you still can. So it's
Vitz had the ANC Youth League.
Yes, yeah.
DA won.
DA won in the year. And I just ran independently, and my, like, campaign was me in a vest, and it just said strength, justice, world peace, vote Anton Taylor. And, you know, this is up against dudes who are trying to talk about, you know. And
I think it's an important platform for politicians to start.
Yeah, well, or to be cured of it. Because so I did really well in the elections. And once I was on the committee, this is like, and as much as it was a lot of humor in my campaign, like I really wanted to affect positive change. And I think being mired down in bureaucracy, like you're a student and you're like, oh, I want to do this and this is going to help so many kids. And then, you know, like, oh, you have to get permission from this person who never applies and this. And as well as dealing with petty politics of like the Oaks from this party hate this party and, Seeing how even at that time, like, it was kind of endemic where guys would have a sort of like, oh, well, I can, you know, I'm on the committee. Let me, certainly not my committee. I mean, I had a great head, but where I could just see people would think, let me just take, like, let's have a meeting and then have a 300 rand meal, you know, at the time. Yeah. Because we're having a meeting, but we're a bunch of students. So for me, it cured me of I think, any desire to get into politics. But I was then involved. Oh, dude, we used to have an event called 6x7s, which was like you run around a cricket field 7 times, and after the first lap, you down a beer.
Oh, Jesus.
And you eat like food dye and spaghetti before. And what eventually starts happening is you just start vomiting multicolored stuff
over each
other. It's like barbaric. And I think what's insane...
I mean, that is a scene from Van Wilder.
Is as you explain the story, you think like, oh, that's like a really weird kind of almost like niche kind of... there wouldn't be that many people, but there would be like hundreds, thousands of spectators like cheering on... Okay. These dudes as they vomited, like, you know, pink and blue and
Jesus Christ.
I would facilitate it and be the MC. And like,
did it exist before you as a
concept? Did exist before me. And then when I came onto the student government, I thought, let's, because then it would be kind of like, it was illegal. And I don't quite know how I managed to get the like the poor security council to allow it.
Okay.
But so that was the kind of things I did. And
but which came first, Van Wilder or you?
No, Van Wilder. So Van Wilder, I think, is probably like early years of school.
So was it a bit of a blueprint?
It was a blueprint. And I just, and you know, who knows? It's like one of these things where you don't know if it's like direct, like I watch a movie about a boxer and then Rocky inspired me, you know, but I definitely, I remember thinking old Ryan Reynolds was the coolest dude of all time. Yeah. And I remember thinking like, I want to be the man on campus. So I think that was, look, maybe that can sit a bit closer towards the, or maybe even replace 10 Things I Hate About You. Cause that then really influenced my, now dude, do I only get 4 movie choices?
You can say as many as you want,
okay.
But we're just going through this.
There's 4
time-stamped.
Okay, because I think Van Wilder is certainly, that was an era in my life, but maybe I'd watched it a bit younger and that did it. And then I think, then I started thinking I'm like quite an arty. Like, you know, like now I'm at university and I'm quite deep and stuff. And I think definitely a big one is Garden State.
Lovely.
Which is still, I watched it.
It's a great film.
I made my girlfriend and I watch it like 2 years ago and it stood the test of time. It's good. I wasn't like, but that, and look, it's got beautiful cinematography.
But it's also got a lot of good humor.
Great music.
It's not a drag through the mud, serious.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of humor and it's Zach Braff's humor, which is very funny, especially if you've loved Scrubs.
Yes.
No, Garden State also was that first sort of indie gem, that real beloved darling of a sort of art house.
Yeah.
Where it was a very easy to digest art house.
Yes.
Film.
Yeah.
And great soundtrack and
beautiful. Oh. And like he, you know, the.
Okay, I could see how that could work for you.
Yeah. You know, like the story about. You know, look, he had been in Scrubs, but he decided, I'm going to write and direct this. I think he did most of the thing.
He did it, and it was by hook or by crook, he made it happen to really show the world that he had more going for him.
Yeah.
And, also that proactive gumption, which I think, you know, you've displayed as well, which is like, I'm going to do this myself.
Yeah.
So I could see how that could come to you. And of course, Natalie Portman. I mean, you just love her.
Oh my God, the crush that I had on her, and
but they designed that movie in such a way that you crush on her so hard.
Yeah, you crush on her
fall in love with her.
Heart-throbbing kind of. You know when you watch a movie and you know.
And old Sarsgaard is so good in that as well.
He is.
I need to go see A Man About a Nitrous Tank.
Yes.
No, great, that was a big memory, movie for me. It was a big movie. Okay, that makes lots of sense. So you had yourself a lovely, wild varsity career.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you know this, but the comedian Bert Kreischer.
Yes, yes!
He's kind of indirectly credited as being the actual Van Wilder. The original, yeah. There was a Rolling Stone article that wanted to focus on the Wild varsity. They went to Florida State. They asked around. They said, who do we need to talk to? Everyone said Bert. They wrote this article, which kind of became the inspiration to Van Wilder.
Yes.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's funny. I listened to a podcast with them the other day, and I couldn't believe I sat there. Because, you know, you think, Ryan Reynolds was the motivation for that drove, like, huge amounts of my behavior for years. And then I was sitting there, and I'm like, no, it's actually Bert Kreischer. Like, you know, of course, like the actor's just the actor, dude. And that was like, and I think I went and read the Rolling Stone article.
I'd love to read it. I think
and like he's just like
the dude,
man. Yeah. You know, and I think, and that's look, and I know there's probably people at UCT who found me, you know, that doesn't agree with everyone, you know, but I was like, yeah, let's have beers in the morning. And I suspect if I came into contact with myself, you know, 20 years ago or 15 years ago, I'd be like, this dude is the most annoying, attention-seeking loser. Get out of my way, you know.
But, you know, there's a time and a place. Yeah. And I think varsity is there for that. I also was trying to figure out myself at the Wits Theater. And I also probably think I'd look back on myself and be like, you pretentious fuck.
Well, maybe it's a sign of health. I often think, you know, when I look back at some of the content I've done or the horror of Facebook memories when you think about it. And I think, you know, almost if you're cringing, it's a good sign because it means you've grown.
Yeah,
you know?
that's a good way to look at it. Our last one is the film you would settle down with.
This is okay. So I'm going to mention... three, okay, just in third. So the film which I think I've maybe finally moved on from, but the James Bond, Daniel Craig genre of you know, Casino Royale starting, and I'm not going to sip. I just thought, like, and again, like, I thought I want to be like, Daniel Craig.
Okay.
And like, I remember, like, I thought one day if I had like a stylist, I would be like, I want to dress like James Bond does when he's casual, you know, like, I mean, I'm not going to walk around in suits. And I would watch Casino Royale. Like, I don't often repeat watch movies, but I would watch that and just be like, he's just the coolest dude ever. Okay. And like, you know, he gets the girls, and which is funny because there's nothing James Bondy about my, like, I'm not a secret agent, who hides behind the shadows. So we moved on from that, and then second place, because it's probably not the film I'm gonna settle down with. The film I actually wanted to watch last night again, my settling down film, but. I'm going to be honest. Like, I watched the most recent two Dune films.
Yeah.
And I fucking loved them. Yeah. Like, both of them?
Yeah. And read the book.
Yeah. So I'd read the book as a kid, watched the film again recently, the first one, reread the book. And in fact, when I was on this meditation retreat, so you know, I don't think I'm spoiling anything, like Paul Atreides. Timothy Chalamet, he drinks the, I think it's called the Water of Life, which I think, having read about it, was inspired by, because in the book I'm like, this sounds just like taking mushrooms, and Frank Herbert experimented.
And apparently, like, the more mushrooms Herbert takes, like, in his life, the wilder
the books get.
Those books get.
Yes.
To the point where, like, it kind of gets a bit silly.
Yeah, the books get, unfortunately, after the first one, it starts to get, I think I got to the third one and it got weird.
I'm out.
Exactly. And I don't know how they're going to, apparently it's going to be a challenge making the third one because it gets really weird. But those films, so when I was meditating and I was struggling, I was like, no, dude, you're just like Paul Atreides going into your, like, drinking the water of life, and you're going to come out of this enlightened and like aware of the...
He like basically goes into a coma in the book, which I guess maybe that's what one or two days of this retreat felt like.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you can identify with him a bit there.
I loved it. It's just, I think, a great film. I'm not gonna marry it, probably. And I do watch it. I do boxing. Like I haven't competed in about a year, but I have amateur boxing matches.
Oh, yeah.
And I would watch the scene at the end of June. I like bought the film where he has a knife fight with a dude, and it's sort of like enters. You know, it's like almost like this is your destiny, and he like, you know, he kills a dude. And I'd watch that scene and be like, this is you, like, stepping into your destiny and get the shit beaten out of me in a boxing ring. But then the film I think I would settle down with, and it's almost a pity I didn't watch it last night for a definitive, like, is Drive with Ryan Gosling.
Interesting.
Oh,
okay.
Dude, okay. That film, have you watched it?
Yeah.
That film, man, I think I love the aesthetic. Yeah. So much. Again, I talk a lot. I'm not like the quiet, brooding character who barely says anything throughout the whole film. But something that I love doing is driving in the evening. Okay. And there's a road in Cape Town called Voortrekker Road. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
It comes
from sort of Salt River through Paro, Goodwood, Vasco, all the way to Bellville. But along the sides of the road, there's a lot of car dealerships, a lot of neon, a lot of, I actually drove along it yesterday, a lot of kind of really niche, like there are obviously supermarkets, but it would be like Russell's Discount Motor Spares, and the font. Like, you know, the number is a landline number, you know, and it was probably like the paint was done 30 years ago looks a kind of, and I just love that aesthetic. And I've tried to drive. Joburg's just too big and scary and like I was too worried about dying.
Next time you come to Joburg, come and visit me at the Bioscope and we can hang out, because I've got a feeling you've got a very you've got a difficult sense of what Joburg is.
I've got
I've seen a lot of your videos. Is a great play on the difference and
some really what suburb is the Bioscope in?
It's effectively Mill Park. So we're quite close to the sort of older suburbs. We're close to Melville.
Yes.
We're sort of in the middle of things, but generally speaking, we're quite central.
Okay. Yeah. So I know that more my girlfriend stayed in Melville, and I know that more kind of arty, cool culture.
Yeah, it's a bit older as well, where like Sandton is more the new city, which it's more like glass and steel. Yeah.
So yeah, that movie.
But that's nice. Drive is great.
I listened to they've also got a great soundtrack,
very definitive soundtrack, which was that like new wavy synth wave, whatever it's called.
So I often listen to synth wave and drive along Voortrekker Road and
lovely. No, that's great. I appreciate that. And I appreciate your time, man. Sorry, I don't want to keep you for too much longer, but it's been a lovely,
hanging
out.
Thank you. I
feel privileged to be the person you got to speak to.
Thank you.
For the first time in 10 years, in 10 days.
You can tell me. We'll sign out afterwards if I was just raving and babbling. And I think, look, man, you really you make it very easy to talk. You know, I think if it were a normal conversation, I'd want to ask you more questions, but I was aware, you know, I guess the luxury of a podcast is you can be a bit self-centered when you're the guest. You know, so it makes me feel better. Like, hopefully if I'm listening, they'll be, you know, if I'm in any way weird, you guys can just go, well, he was holed up for 10 days not looking.
Man,
thank you. And what a cool way to get to know a bit about you.
Yeah, it says a lot.
You know, I know when I would work as a commentator, you could get information packs about the players, and I would always be so interested in their favorite songs and favorite movies. And often sometimes the guys wouldn't fill in what their But I really share the sentiment that your favorite bits of art, whether it be books, music, films, they really do say a lot about you. So it felt really a cool experience to be able to explain why I love those films. Yeah.
Lovely. Thank you, man. And we'll see you down the line.
See you down the line.
Next
yeah.
time you're in Joburg, come and visit us.
I would love to. Yeah. I hope that some work will bring me there, and I'd like to come. And yeah, you can show me around the area of the Bioscope.
Yeah, it's lovely. The shopping center is amazing.
Maybe I can go there for a date night, I think, with my girlfriend. We can come up to Joburg sometime. That could be cool.
Lovely. Yeah. Thanks, man.
Sup, brother.
All right. Lekker chat.
Yeah.
As I said, lekker dude. Happy guy. I find it amazing that, you know, we chatted just after he'd done this retreat.
Yes.
He hasn't spoken to anyone
right.
in days. It's wild. but yeah, you might pick this up from the videos or the photo, but clearly this didn't take place in the Bioscope.
Mm-hmm.
I took a trip to Cape Town a while back and recorded it there. And a nice little shout out to Mount Wave Studios,
right.
who let us record in there. Gaddy, you'd appreciate this. This is the Indian Miner Guys.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so it's the studio that they have. It's this
James
kind of
and
yeah, it's Matt's place. So they record all the stuff in there. It's like a live room, and there's amps and guitars around you, and it's lovely.
Cool.
So, yeah, big loves to them for letting us record there.
Nice.
Magic, guys. I think let's go home.
Yeah.
Fun.
Let's do it. No, we had a lovely day here at the video store. Thank you for listening thus far.
Mm.
Our home base is thevideostore.co.za, and there are links to other previous episodes, especially when it comes to the guests. You can find them. Lots of people similar in essence to a guy like Anton, and I just love it when these guys are carving out like a very new, very sort of 2024 way of approaching acting.
Yeah,
where they're producing content themselves, they're becoming their own TV channel. I mean, we know this, but it's just great to see it so many years later, where in practice this is what is working for them, and they're becoming their own production agency.
Cool
guys like Donovan Goliath. Temba Robin, Boa Bosch, all these other folks. We've also got interviews with them.
So yeah.
It's nice to get into that. And for people who are interested, this is how you do it. This is how these things come about. This is how you build an economy around yourself, which I think is quite a cool way to unpack over the course of an hour.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. We'll see you again next week.
Yeah.
All right. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye-bye.